8:30 a.m. KSDP Radio. I'm Kels Hetherington, and this is Meet the People for February 26, 2010. My guest this morning is Dr. Elizabeth Lee Villette. She joins us on the phone this morning from her practice in Tucson, Arizona, to discuss President Obama's proposed overhaul of the nation's health care system. Dr. Villette, good morning to you, and thanks for calling in to the radio.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm happy to do that, and I suspect it's a lot warmer here than where you are.
Well, it's in the 30s right now, I think, in Sandpoint, and probably where you are, it's in the 80s. Am I right?
That's about right.
Is the sun shining, too?
Yes, we have a gorgeous Arizona winter day.
Well, then you're getting some of the same weather we are getting here. The sun is out, and there's just a clear blue sky out my window in the studio.
Well, wonderful. And just to clarify, my name is pronounced Vleet, like fleet.
All right, Vleet. So we have Dr. Vleet on the air with us. Well, Dr. Vleet, before we get into the discussion about the healthcare debate transpiring right now on Capitol Hill, tell us about your own medical practice.
Well, I have a practice that has focused on women's health from pre-puberty to menopause, but I also have been an independent physician, independent medically and independent in terms of not answering to insurance companies. My focus is the relationship with the patient and setting up a relationship that is between me and the patient without the intrusion of third parties. And I actually did that in 1986 when I first started my practice, because I felt that the government insurance companies, Medicare, for example, and the private insurance companies were intruding into the physician-patient relationship. And I think that that is one of the biggest issues that I see in what is present in the current bills before Congress, is that it inserts the government into the relationship between you and your health professionals in a way that limits your choices of what you will be able to do for treatment, who you can see, and what it's going to cost. So I've always practiced as an independent physician answering to my patients, and I believe that that is the model we need to get back to in order to put patients in the driver's seat with regard to their health care.
So as an independent physician, as you described it, do you not bill insurance companies? Do you simply bill your patients for the services you render to them?
I do not bill insurance companies or have any relationship. I don't sign contracts with insurance companies like most practices do these days. My contract medically and from a business standpoint is solely with the patient. So the patient pays my fee, and if they don't like what I'm doing, they leave, or they see someone else. Patient pays my fee, and then we give them the paperwork that they use to send to their insurance provider and submit for reimbursement under the terms of the plan. That's the way it always used to be. Physicians started filing insurance as a convenience and courtesy for patients, and then along about in the mid-1980s, we began seeing physicians signing contracts with insurance companies directly under managed care programs, and that ends up creating mixed loyalty. It means that the physician has a contract with an insurance company to do what they say, and it means that the physician has a contract with the patient to do what the patient needs. And medicine was always founded on the principle that we answered to the patient, and it was our moral and ethical and professional responsibility to do what was in the best interest of the patient and for their benefit, not for the benefit of a third party.
Well, Dr. Villette, I wanted to have you on the radio today to discuss the health care reform that is, of course, being discussed yet again on Capitol Hill. Yesterday, Republican and Democratic leaders met with the president for a health care summit at Blair House. Thus far, the summit has gotten mixed reviews, and the liberal media is not talking a lot about it, which is telling in and of itself. What is your reaction to the summit?
Well, I think it actually provided a very good opportunity for the American people to see that the Republicans, far from being the party of no, are actually the party of no, K-N-O-W, in that they knew the bill better than President Obama appeared to. They knew options that would keep patients in control of their health care, and they knew options that would help to bring back the competitive free market principles that help to keep costs down.
Yeah.
I was actually rather impressed. I was seeing patients, so I didn't get to see the whole thing, but I actually felt that for the first time, I think the American people got to see that the Republicans were calm, they were measured, they had done their homework, they had good, positive, constructive ideas that resonated with what the American people want right now. And I think since the Democratic administration, both at the president level and in Congress, had shut out the Republicans throughout this entire health care debate, I really think this was good that it gave the American public, who took time to watch, a chance to see that the Republicans have some good ideas. Now, I want to say very clearly to your listener audience, I am concerned that with actions by both parties. I don't think either party has handled this particularly well overall. I'm an independent politically, and so I am not speaking from the standpoint of someone who automatically supports the Republican Party. I think that as a physician and as someone whose advocacy is for patients, I think the ideas from the Republican Party, as we look at it now, are the ideas that are needed to keep the patients in control of their health care choices and have physicians answering to patients rather than to government or private insurance companies.
Doc, I couldn't agree more with you. And I think the Republicans actually won the discussion yesterday. And I was particularly impressed with Tennessee Republican Senator Lamar Alexander when he was asking.
I was very impressed with what he had to say and the fact that he kept coming back, rebutting in a polite and respectful way, but he rebutted the president's incorrect statements several times.
He did, and it was amazing, and it made the president look a lot less high and mighty than he was trying to appear.
Well, and what I thought was interesting in going back and reviewing some of the summit afterwards, and I think it was obvious to me, and I've actually had a fair amount of professional training in media work, and so I was watching it from that standpoint, and I actually thought, looking at body language, that the president's body language became angrier and angrier as people pointed out his factual misstatements.
Exactly. That was my same perception of what was going on and transpiring right there. But I wanted to ask you, Lamar Alexander, as he was talking back and forth and dialoguing with the president, made the contention that insurance premiums would go up if the president's plan and that of Democrats were enacted. The president said, no, that was not the case. Lamar continued to say that, yes, actually this was. What's the truth here?
I don't think there's any question but what the president made another misstatement of fact. The CBO, Congressional Budget Office, multiple independent organizations, and multiple insurance companies have come out and publicly stated what Lamar Alexander stated, that under the current bills, the way the government is mandating what they have to cover and the types of people that need to be included, there's no question but what the premiums will go up. It can't be otherwise.
What do you say to the argument? Well, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, if the government is saying you have to cover all people regardless of medical risk, then that would be the same thing as saying to all car insurance companies, it doesn't matter if somebody's had 10 DUIs or has had 20 speeding tickets, you got to cover them at the same price you're going to pay for somebody who has a clean driving record. Well, obviously, for an insurance company to cover somebody who has DUIs and speeding tickets at the same rate as somebody who has a clean driving record, the person with the clean driving record is going to pay more.
It would seem
and that is exactly the model that the federal government, that this legislation is trying to put into place. It takes away the insurance carrier's ability to price the premium based upon age and health status and whether or not you've lost weight and whether or not you keep your blood pressure down by exercise and eating right and not smoking versus somebody who doesn't.
If you're just joining us
so
here,
there's no way but what them they're going to go up.
If you're just joining us here on 8:30 a.m. KSDP Radio, this is Meet the People. I'm Kels Hetherington. I'm talking with Dr. Elizabeth Lee Vliet, and I got her name wrong at the beginning, but I think that's the correct way to pronounce
that's
it.
That's right. Thank
Vliet.
You.
All right, we finally got it right, Doc. We're talking about the healthcare proposal that has morphed somewhat from where it started. Now, what the president responded to Lamar Alexander, the senator from one of the two senators from Tennessee, with was by saying, look, yes, prices for premiums will go up. However, the value of the product will also be increased. There will be more services, there'll be more coverage in the insurance that you get. So the president basically argued back that no, prices would not increase because they were not comparing apples to apples, but rather apples to oranges. Is there any truck in that?
Well, that may be the way that he justifies it, but look at it this way. If I'm a menopausal woman, if the government mandates that fertility treatment be included, what value is that to me? Why do I pay more to get something the government says has to be covered for everybody when it's not something I could ever possibly use? So the problem here is that when you have a government bureaucrat, Congress, president, bureaucrat, health panel, czar, it doesn't matter what you call them, when you have the government panels deciding this is what everybody needs, then we get back to the one-size-fits-all approach. We get back to the fact that someone who's young and healthy doesn't need that. Why should they have to pay more? It's no value to them to pay more to get something they don't need. So it's a totally illogical argument, and he's talking around in circles trying to justify something that doesn't make sense to most people who look at it with a common sense approach. Why shouldn't I be able to go out in the free market across state lines and buy a policy, a plain vanilla health insurance policy that covers me for catastrophic stuff that I'm most worried about and that is what I need? Why do I have to buy a policy that covers everything under the sun that I don't want and can't use?
All right, you mentioned that the government will exert a lot of control and get in between the patient and the doctor relationship. Many Americans have expressed concern about this. We've heard about this idea that there will be death panels, and the Democrats have said, oh no, that's not the case. We're not going to let Granny die. Is there
is this
a legitimate fear, Doc?
It's absolutely a legitimate fear. Sarah Palin called it as it is, even though the opposition did not like her term. I'm sure she chose the term to get people's attention, and I actually applauded her doing that because it is in the bill. Now, here's the catch. The death panel that she referred to isn't in the health care bill, it's in the stimulus bill, and it was already passed. This was something I wrote about in my op-ed, which is on my website, called Obamacare's Lethal Third Rail Shock to Come. The Democrats know that they already passed in the stimulus bill two elements of structure for health care government control. One is the medical records, which was in the stimulus bill under the health information technology section. And in that section of the stimulus bill, all medical records, all physicians, all health professional service centers like hospitals and urgent cares and everything else will be mandated to use electronic medical records beginning in 2014. And every patient encounter has to, that's an office visit, has to be sent electronically to Washington to the Federal Health Coordinating Council, or Federal Health SAR, at the time of the office visit. That means in 2014, American citizens no longer own their health information. It's going directly to the federal government. And most people don't know that that's already into law. That was in the stimulus bill. The second component of the stimulus bill that is the structure for government control was the comparative effectiveness research and the structure of that government panel and the funding for that research that would decide, based upon comparing studies, whether a particular treatment is something that the expert panel would approve for you based on your age and your perceived value to society. That was described in detail by Ezekiel Emanuel in his article on the Complete Live System. He is Obama's senior White House health policy advisor. He's the brother of Rahm Emanuel. And he's written about this. It's all there in the public domain for anyone to check. The problem is most people don't realize that the stimulus bill had those two tracks of healthcare government control already laid down as law passed in the stimulus bill. The major piece they need to put in place in order to control everything that you do is the insurance reform that they're now talking about.
Mm. Now, here's a question that
Sarah Palin was absolutely correct that the structure was set up. Everyone took her to task, and the Democrats lied and said it wasn't in the health care proposals. Well, they had carefully taken that health care piece of legislation and buried it in the stimulus bill that nobody read.
Hmm. I did not know that, and that's excellent for our listeners
Most
to hear.
Most people don't know that. Well, that op-ed is on my website, www.herplace.com. It's a PDF. It's free. People can go and download the PDF and read it. And in that op-ed, I refer to the sections in the stimulus bill where these two components were passed, what the sections were that addressed those issues.
If you're just joining us here on 8:30 a.m. KSDP Radio, I'm Kels Hetherington, talking with Dr. Elizabeth Lee Leet from her office in Arizona. Dr. Leet, you touched on the fact that what the Democrats basically want to do now is force insurance companies to cover everyone for the same price, regardless of risk. What is of great interest to me is that many of the insurance companies were seemingly against this grand plan that the Democrats were pitching to America, yet they were funneling money to very liberal candidates. Also, the stock and the public companies that have healthcare, that their stock market value was increasing as their share price went up. Why would companies that were going to face stricter regulations have a market price that was going up and up and up? Can you explain that?
Well, I think that what the market was seeing was that there would be more people required by the government to buy insurance, which would increase the value of the revenue for the companies and increase the value of the stock. I think that was a different issue. I think it was an issue. Is an issue that is not in the best interest of consumers, because when the government, first of all, it's unconstitutional for the government to require you, anyone living here as a citizen, to buy a particular product. Think how crazy it would be if they decided, okay, we're going to now mandate that everybody has to buy a smart car, and you can't use the car you want to drive. That it's just as unconstitutional to force everyone to buy a particular product in any field as it is to force them to buy an insurance contract, health policy. So the problem is that from a market perspective, I think the market was seeing, okay, well, if there are government mandates and everybody has to buy health insurance, then the health insurance companies are going to sell more policies, make more money, and the stock will go up. That's a whole separate issue from a business analysis from the issue that I feel is important, which is patients having the right to choose. Just like they can choose what kind of car insurance they buy and what kind of homeowners insurance they buy, and they don't have to buy a Cadillac. They can buy a less costly car insurance policy or a less costly homeowners policy. They ought to be able to buy a less costly health insurance policy, and they own it, they control it, and individuals should be given the same tax deduction for buying their policy as a business gets for buying it for employees. And if you do all of those things, put the patients back in the driver's seat, competition will force the prices down, as it always does. I mean, look at the price of televisions and computers and how much that has come down in the years since many of these technological gadgets first went on the market. Prices are lower for many of those than they were at the beginning. And we see that in almost every field.
Dr. Vliet, the Democrats literally stopped talking about health care reform after the election of Scott Brown, the special election in Massachusetts to fill former Senator Ted Kennedy's seat. Now the White House and congressional Democrats appear to have returned to center stage and again are discussing health care reform. What, if anything, is different now about what they're proposing in the way of a massive health care reform package than from the health care reform they were proposing prior to Senator Brown's election in Massachusetts?
I don't think anything has changed except the fact that they, number one, are not listening to the American public. Number two, are determined to force the health care bill down our throats. And they are now deciding that they're going to use the reconciliation. I mean, that was the end result of the health summit. Well, fine. We heard your ideas. We don't like them. We never were interested in your ideas. We're going to do what we want to do, and now we're going to push it through on reconciliation. And the American people, as I thought President Obama was really quite arrogant and quite cavalier when he said, well, if the American people don't like it, then there's the next election. It's like full speed ahead, damn the torpedoes.
Yep, that seems to be what he's saying, and I think that... I think November is going to be a very difficult time for Democrats if they continue along this political course.
But the Democrats know that once the legislation is in place, it is very difficult to roll it back. And so they are just taking their chances. But the other thing I want to mention, everybody keeps saying, well, we just don't understand why he's going ahead and the Democrats are going ahead with this when the American people have expressed such opposition to it. I think it's very obvious why they're doing it, and that is that they are bound and determined to enact the radical agenda, and they don't really care what the American people think.
I think the only way the Democrats can save themselves from a terrible, terrible election cycle in November is to get something in the way of health care passed so they can declare victory. And it has to be significant enough so that people don't think that they have quit and gone home in Washington.
Well, and I think the strategy that we're going to see unfold, because they've already been talking about it, they've shifted from talking about health care reform to insurance reform and putting in price controls and mandates on coverage for the private insurers, because they know full well that once the government controls the price the company can charge and what they have to cover, it will drive them out of business. They can't stay in business.
Earlier in our conversation, you talked a bit about the information system that was put into place starting in 2014, if I'm correct, that will require doctors to send to Washington electronically records of patient visits. Is there any review process that system will entail? And will the government be deciding if a doctor is doing a good or bad thing for his or her patient?
Well, yes, that was why the health information technology electronic medical record was coupled with the component called comparative effectiveness research. The government bureaucrats will, an expert panel will be deciding whether your doctor is doing what they think he should do, he or she, rather than your doctor practicing the science and art of medicine, doing what he or she feels is in your best interest when it's your physician seeing you in the office who knows you best.
So right now, as the law is written and is about to go into effect, starting in 2014, these records will start beginning to be compiled. But without the next phase of the legislation, there's nothing they can really do. Am I correct in that assessment?
No, you're not correct. The two phases of the legislation in the stimulus bill work together, and they already set up the structure for the federal government to control your records and control your treatment options.
Mm.
The third rail that will totally kill private care is what I was mentioning, the missing third rail for this track system of government control, is the insurance reform where they control what the insurance companies charge and what they have to cover. The other two are already in place, already passed, and due to take effect in 2014, after the next presidential election. So the other shoe isn't going to drop until after the next presidential election, so people need to wake up now. That's why many of us are speaking out on this at this point, to educate people what was in the stimulus bill that is very dangerous for patient privacy and patient control of their health care choices.
So let me get this right. If the government reviews a visit you had with your doctor and the action that your doctor took during that visit, and they decide that they disagree with your doctor's action and recommendation, what conceivably might happen?
Well, there are a couple of things. First of all, part of the material that I've read indicates that the feedback will be prompt, so that the doctor's told what he can and can't do under the guidelines of the expert panel in Washington. So it's not like your doctor would be reviewed after he'd already done it. He's going to be told whether he or she can do it now.
Hmm.
So let's say your doctor thinks you need an MRI. If the expert panel says no, you know, you push the button, you send the note, and the feedback comes back in the next 10 minutes that says, no, you have to go through these steps first, we're not going to approve an MRI, then you don't get to have your MRI until you've done XYZ before you get there.
That's a tragedy. Dr. Villette, thank you so much for joining me on the air this morning. And
You're very welcome. And tell your listeners, if they wish, they can go to the website and download the op-eds on any of these subjects that they would like to read more about.
Okay, Dr. Villette, thank you very much.
Yes.
Okay,
you're
thanks.
Welcome.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.